Today, I'm gonna lick 7 way too bougie brown paper envelopes and seal them. After sealing each one, I'll carefully lay a stamp on it. Then I'll slowly and methodically ruin the whole envelope by writing an address on it. Let's be honest, my handwriting is less like predictable computer font and more like a handwritten card from a third grader. No offense, third graders. Anyway, today I'm sending a letter to each of the groomsmen who stood in my wedding way back in 2012. But nobody writes me letters anymore, except for realtors, insurance agents, and other people who want my money. So why am I doing this? Every year since 2015, I've written a letter to my groomsmen because on January 14th of that year, I felt strongly like God wanted me to act on a small creative idea. And I happened to hear a story that night, a story that reshaped how I look at small, creative ideas.
Audible.
Hi, my name is Rob Vischer. You're listening to the first episode of my new podcast, Audible God. With every new episode, you'll hear stories of ordinary people who claim they heard from God. You'll hear from a guy who put a box of diapers on his head, and another dude who made over 2,000 bucks from acting on a dream. And today, you'll hear from an artist who thought God told him to paint a portrait for a friend who was in a coma. God! I'm here today with Sean Hootspeth, one of my great friends. He's an artist that does portraits.
Hootspeth.
That was mildly embarrassing. Before we go any further, though, let's talk about my good friend, Sean Hootspeth. Because while he's not here, I can call him anything I want. When I saw him for the first time, he reminded me of an Alice in Wonderland character, except more rock and roll. Much like Dolly Parton or Elton John, he looks like he's from another planet. Well, maybe just another neighborhood. A neighborhood normal people like me read about on TMZ. He sports a long black ponytail, a wide, warm, almost childlike smile, and usually rocks an all-black outfit complete with black platform shoes that showcase a large, visible silver spring at the heel. His shoes look like steampunk versions of pilgrim shoes. You know, like Jamestown, the Mayflower, Thanksgiving. Like those black shoes, except sponsored by Slinky. He's definitely never seen the inside of any cubicle. When you meet him, if you're not instantly curious about his look and his shoes, he'll eventually draw you in through his magnetic brand of kindness and conversational storytelling. Listen to him.
I was at a dinner engagement, and there happened to be a nurse that was sitting at the table that we were all part of, and when I was saying my name, Sean, they were like, well, I had a patient, you know, last night named Sean. And I was like, well, so what's up with your patient, Sean? They're like, well, you know, we're not really allowed to talk much about, you know, what's going on, but I just worry about this young man because he's so young. And for some reason, he had collapsed while he was at work one day. And I was like, oh, that's, you know, horrible. And they said he was a runner. And I kept saying, okay, well, this sounds like somebody that I know. But I just kind of, you know, pushed it aside and kept listening. And then they said that he had gone home and within 2 days had gone to his neighbor's, which was his roommate's mother, who was kind of like a surrogate mother to him because his family lived in Mississippi and he lived here in Nashville. And she was going to like kind of take care of him for the weekend because he was feeling like he had the flu or something. He just wasn't feeling well. And he went in to take a nap. And I think she checked on him maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours later, and she couldn't wake him up. And so they rushed him to the hospital, and he was in a coma at that moment. As this person was describing the situation, I kept seeing my friend. His face kept coming into my vision. And I was like, wow. I said, this sounds crazy, but I just have an inclination that I think I know this person you're talking about. And they were like, well, maybe so, but probably not. And I was like, I know you can't give me information because of HIPAA laws, but if I ask you a hint about this person, could you just say yes or no? And they're like, I can't make any promises, but you know, go ahead. And this was around 9:30 or 10 p.m. at night. And so I said, would his last name kind of remind you of a city maybe in Alabama? And they were like, I'm not going to say yes or no, but you might be onto something.
He was more than onto something. His friend's name was Sean Birmingham. So Sean Hudspeth was out with a group of people at dinner when a friend of a friend who happened to be a nurse heard Sean Hudspeth's name and starts randomly sharing a tragic story about one of her patients who had the same first name. And the patient happened to be Sean Hudspeth's friend, Sean Birmingham. Don't get the two confused. Hudspeth, the artist. Birmingham, the guy in a coma.
This nurse said, well, you know, he's alone right now because his family's out of state and they're trying to make accommodations to be able to get here. But he's been alone in ICU for, you know, quite some time. And I was just like, oh, my goodness gracious, you know. So this prompting was in my spirit and it kept telling me, you need to go and paint a painting of him. And I was like, why? And I was like, why? And it's like, well, he's alone. And so what if he wakes up tomorrow and no one's there? At least he'll know that you were there and you had been there and left a painting just to let him know that you're can't wait. And I wanted to paint him when he was smiling, you know, because his smile is so vibrant and beautiful. And he has one of those ultra bright or Colgate smiles. And so that's how I said he walks in the room. You're like, look at that bright light. You know, his smile is so radiant. And so I was like, I want to capture a smile for him just as a little, you know, like say I was here and I'm, you know, praying for you and I'm hoping good things, you know. And so it's around 10 p.m. at night. And I kept saying, well, I'll do it, you know, and I'll take it to him. And I felt this tugging at my heart and God saying, you're going to do it right now. And I'm like, it's 10 p.m. What are you talking about? No way. You know, and I kept trying to talk myself out of it. And I felt the spirit of the Lord. And this is the first time that honestly, he was saying, give me the brush. And I'm like, okay, you know, I've prayed over every portrait that I've done because I want to honor the person that I'm painting. But this time it was something that I thought I wanted to do, but it was kind of out of my hands.
So at 10 p.m., Sean picked up his brush and started painting and painting and painting and painting and painting and painting.
The painting started forming itself and I'm saying, okay, well, he's coming together. There he is. And around 2:15, 3 a.m., I would say I was completely finished with it. And I was like, okay, it's done. So I'll just take it to him later on today. And God's like, no, you're taking it to him now. And I'm like, what? Now. And I was like, first and foremost, I think he's in ICU. Secondly, I don't even know exactly, you know, what floor that is, or I don't know what the hours are, the visiting. I know nothing. He's like, get in the car. And I'm like, what are you? No, seriously. And I pull up to the hospital, and honestly, I'm telling you, I tried my best to talk myself out of it. I kept trying to be like, you've lost your mind right now. And I was just like, I don't know what's going on. But again, it feels like I'm out of body sort of. And there's a bigger presence kind of taking over. And I said, here I go. So I walk in, I look on the, you know, this is again 3 a.m. I look on the chart where ICU might be, and I guess I go to the floor, walk in like I own the place, you know, with my little gift bag, and it's quiet, of course. It's really, really like demure. People are asleep. Some of the nurses probably were as well. You know? And I look over and I see a nurse. It was a male nurse at the time. And he's like, hey, man. And I was like, hi. And I said, I'm here to see Sean Birmingham. And he's like, oh, wow. And I was like, I just needed to drop this off, you know? And he's like, oh, well, thank you for coming. And I appreciate that. He goes, but he's a really, really sick young man. And I said, okay, well, do you mind if I just go and say a prayer with him, you know? And he's like, sure, he's right in here. So he led me to his room. And I saw my friend laying there by himself on a ventilator with tubes everywhere. And it was too much, the moment. I was just like, Lord, have mercy on this sweet soul, you know? Wow, have mercy on him. put the painting on a little counter right in front of his bed. And the funny thing is about my parents, when we were children, my dad used to pray over our feet because, as you know, the Bible states that his word is a light into our path, you know, and a lamp into our feet. And so he would always pray over our feet. And since Sean was a runner, I looked at his feet, you know, and I even took a picture of them because I wanted to pray over his feet, you know, and I even wanted my dad to pray over his feet as well. And so I simply prayed with him, held his hand at the moment, and I just left the painting there, and I went home. I woke up the next morning around 8:30, and I had, at that time, used to keep my phone on silent because I needed rest. And that was before the notification social media world really took over. But when I woke up, I had gotten a voicemail from his mother. It was around 6:30 in the morning, and she apparently had gotten to the hospital, and they had seen the painting and had opened the card, and it was a tearful message from his mom.
Hi, Sean. This is Michelle Birmingham, Sean's mother. I just opened the gift that is brought. I don't know if you were here yesterday. If you did, I did not see you, and I'm sorry. But I wanted to just let you know how much we appreciate your thoughts, and I know Sean would, and the gift, the painting is just phenomenal. I appreciate it so much. It's just precious, and I'm sure he'll love it too when he sees it. But right now, it's good for my heart, and I thank you. And we will keep all his friends updated, so. There's not a lot. He's a little bit worse. There's some other conditions like pneumonia and so forth. Seems to be setting in, but we're just going to fight.
Wow. Wow. And it was the first time that I had, I guess, physically realized, you know, the impact of what my artistry could do for anyone. I thought it was just in the past about, here's something to hang on your wall and smile about, you know, but to have someone say, this means so much to us right now. It meant so much to me, too. I decided to go down later in that day and meet them, and we kind of connected. And I guess the funny part about this is the painting kind of took a life of its own, and people were like, I want one, I want one, I want one. Like the grandparents wanted one, you know, the father wanted one. They're all the younger brother wanted one. The first painting was just of Sean, and he was just smiling as a profile. His grandfather wanted a duplicate of that, but bigger, you know. So I did a larger one for his grandfather. And then his grandparents both were like, well, we were with him when he was, you know, graduating college or high school or whatever. And can you paint, you know, him in the middle of both of us? And I was like, okay, sure. And put some color into it because he loves blue and he had bright blue eyes or has bright blue eyes. I'm like, well, of course, let's do that.
Well, we got to know him because we saw him frequently. He brought so much to us. He even came in and saw our other son sitting in a chair in the waiting room, you know, overnight, just laying out in a chair. He went and bought him a pillow and a blanket. I mean, that's how sensitive he is, you know. But he brought a painting that he did, and we'd never seen any of his work before, but it was of our Sean's face, head, shoulders. It wasn't like a whole body shot, but it was a great, wonderful picture, and it was such a blessing because at that point we didn't know if that might be the last depiction of our son that we had. He was on a ventilator. He's, you know, just unresponsive to anyone, anything around him. You can tell. I can feel it like it was that day. You know, so they start asking questions after questions after questions, going in different directions. Has he been out of the country? Has he been around animals in the woods? Or, you know, we're just having to answer these questions the best we knew, although we didn't live, you know, right where he was, and he didn't tell us everything he did. It took them at least 10 days of running tests, waiting for the results, eliminating, you know, this possibility, eliminating that possibility.
They didn't know if it was the West Nile virus during the time. That was a big thing. They didn't know if it was something he had, you know, just acquired through, it could be something local. They didn't even know what the problem was. They were doing countless tests, and they were saying, what is causing this young guy, you know, to be in a coma and not be able to even recover from it? And the infection had gone into his spinal cord and was going into his brainstem, and they were saying that they were able to see lesions that were forming on his brain. And they were like, this is, you guys just know that we're getting to a place that it's not hopeful any longer.
So we're just there, just praying, you know, for his life, that he would, his body would, you know, respond and come out of it and be okay. I remember one time they went to take him for tests. We were in the room. They took him. They got outside the door, and his heart stopped, and they came running back. All the, you know, all the medical staff surrounding that bed, pulling the bed back into the room, and one was on top of him, giving him CPR, trying to revive him. And I just went to the floor. Uh-oh. Because I just thought, oh, you know, that was it. I didn't think we'd have him after that.
Despite his mother's prayers, Sean Birmingham wasn't getting any better.
It was one of those situations where you're like, this doesn't feel right. I was like, what? And, you know, how, what? Explain, Lord help us. You know, we're, you know, believing that it's going to be amazing. And they're just saying, thanks for trying, you know. And I still in my mind, you know, couldn't receive or accept it. But I was just listening to what the doctors were saying. And they were saying, if you're on a ventilator, you know, more than 7 days, it's because it's usually keeping you alive, you know. Unless they've induced the coma. And this was not an induced coma. This was something that was happening organically from his body trying to protect itself. And so they were saying, we're getting to a place where if you, and again, as you all may know or may not know, when you're living in a hospital, whether it be in a lobby or a waiting room or even in a hospital room, it becomes physically taxing, exhausting, and you're living for any ounce of hope. You know, moment to moment, day to day. And you live off positive. You're like, give me anything I can hang on to. And the doctors weren't giving him anything. They were like, you know, we're getting close to possibly the end. And so day 8, day 9, day 10, by day 11, the family was saying, we don't know what to do, you know. And the doctors were saying, you might want to make a decision.
Our children are lent to us. From God. God gives those to us as a gift. But when it comes down to, I mean, you have to give him back now. You know, you may not have him after today, but you have to be able to give him to me. I mean, it's a different, you know, I mean, you really have to look at your faith and how you're going to handle that.
It came a time when the family said, we're going to kind of gather. We've made a decision to remove him from the ventilator and just say our peace and honor his life. And I was like, oh my goodness, really? You know, and it's one of those things, again, where you don't want to receive it, but you just, the way the world is presenting it to you is like there's kind of no hope here. And so you just kind of take what you have left and try to live with that. And so they were saying, we're thinking around 2:30, we're going to do this. And I was like, oh, I was obligated at the time. I think it was on a Sunday afternoon, if I'm not mistaken. And I was like, I can't be there till around 5. So can you wait till I come with you and be there too? And again, I wasn't part of the family. I was kind of an adopted for 11 days. And I didn't want to impose that upon them because this is their privacy and their child. But I just kind of wanted to, you know, be there to give him love. And so they were like, well, we'll try and wait till 5 if we can, you know.
A little after 4 p.m., Sean Hudspeth started preparing to go to the hospital. He prayed for the family's comfort and for their peace. And while he gathered his things, he picked up his phone.
And it was around 4:15. I had a text message that said, he just woke up.
This story is crazy. Here's the craziest thing about it, though. Sean Birmingham has never heard it. He knows he was in a coma. He knows Sean Hudspeth painted a portrait for him. But he doesn't know his family was going to take him off the ventilator at 2:30. He doesn't know Sean Hudspeth asked them to wait till 5. And he doesn't know he woke up during that delay. At first, I was sad and a little bit confused that Michelle had never told her son the whole story. But from what I've gathered, Michelle Birmingham is actually a hero. Keeping the story from her son protected him from any further mental trauma or confusion at pivotal stages in his recovery. And after 8 years of Michelle telling a slightly different story, the real one has almost been forgotten. And I think that's okay, because when I look at my own kids, I realize Michelle doesn't care how her son woke up. She just cares that he's awake. Enter Sean Birmingham. Since you woke up from the coma, have there been specific effects from the coma?
I've learned to talk again, to eat, to walk. And so that was very difficult for me when all my life I've been a very independent person, that I love to do stuff on my own. And at this point, I couldn't do anything. And since then, you know, it's been years of ups and downs. Things would go good for a while, and then they would plunge. My speech would be fine, and all of a sudden, I'm talking like this.
My speech would be fine. Then all of a sudden, I'd be talking like this. Sean used to dream of being in the orchestra. He used to run. He used to be able to talk without slurring his words. He used to drive. He can't do any of those things anymore.
And that was the hardest part, was trying to get my life back to where I was and where I thought it should be, and realizing that I can't be that anymore.
Before the coma, Sean lived in Nashville on his own. After the coma, he moved to a small town in Mississippi and stays with his parents. Before the coma, he was perfectly healthy and fit. After the coma, he was eventually diagnosed with MS. Before the coma, he had lots of friends his age. After the coma, his closer friends are his parents' age. If Sean's life was a before and after photo, I wouldn't buy his product. In before and after photos, though, I can only see things like whiter smiles and more defined abs. I can't see what's really going on.
He gave me a chance for a new life, and he knew that eventually I would get to the point where I couldn't do anything. So he gave me all these people that, you know, I could really look up to, and see what God can do and God, how he can bless me. Regardless of how I feel about where I live and how I live and about not being able to revive myself, I have a new outlook on God's provision for me.
From everything Sean Birmingham said, he seemed to have gained a new perspective on life. So at the very end of our conversation, I asked him point blank, is life more fulfilling now than it was before your coma?
Yes, absolutely. I'm still not perfect. I never will be. But I'm in peace now.
I'm at peace now. All the way back in 2015, when I heard Sean Hutzpah's story of God asking him to act on a small creative idea and his friend waking up from a coma because of it, this wasn't the storybook ending I had envisioned. Somehow, it's better.
I have to look at it as if I didn't listen to the Lord at the beginning to do the painting for him, I wouldn't have been in the picture at all, nor would, you know, the painting. But because I did listen to the Lord and I did, you know, act upon the painting and it did make this part of his story, I was able to see God revive him.
Audible.
Thanks to Jake the Snake Townsend and the Way Nation team for filming and recording these interviews. The theme music is brought to you by my favorite neighbor and aspiring Olympic hammer thrower, Joe Fry. We call him Thor. And thanks to Hutzpah, Michelle Birmingham and Sean Birmingham for sharing your stories with us. You can find more fun and meaningful podcasts, videos, and blogs on waynation.com.
God!
If you have an Audible God story, I definitely want to hear it. Go to audiblegod.com now and share your story with me. Again, go to audiblegod.com and you'll be able to email and call me. If you want a friend of yours to play this podcast on her earbuds, it's up to you. Hit subscribe. Then text the first friend that comes to mind and say, hey, you gotta listen to the Audible God podcast. It's audible, awesome. Not bad.